This is Carol reading the pantograph for September 13th, 2018. In Normal, as Hurricane Florence churned its way to the Carolina coast with winds of 130 miles per hour, more than 1,000 miles away in a warehouse in Normal, 35 volunteers worked efficiently and cheerfully to assist people who will survive the monster storm. "Chances are we'll never see the people we are helping," said one volunteer, Sue Arbuckle of Bloomington. "That's okay," said Arbuckle, wiping perspiration from her brow as she took a break to answer questions. "We're making a difference." The food was being made at Midwest Food Bank, 2031 Warehouse Road, where 35 volunteers from throughout the Bloomington-Normal area packed 8,000 to 10,000 hygiene kits Wednesday afternoon. The kits, each a drawstring bag containing 2 1-gallon bags of personal care items, will be loaded onto Midwest Food Bank semi-trailer trucks with disaster relief food boxes. "We have 5 semi-loads of food boxes ready to go," Mike Hoffman, Midwest Food Bank Procurement and Logistics Director, said as he opened a food box to show the non-perishable food and paper towels inside. "Each semi has about 1,000 boxes, each box containing enough shelf-stable food to feed a family of 4 for 4 to 5 days. But the hygiene kits will be as welcome by survivors of Hurricane Florence as food," Hoffman said. "If you're in a shelter and you don't have anything, shampoo and soap and toothpaste and a toothbrush are awful nice to have," Hoffman said. The 5 truckloads of supplies will head to the Carolinas as soon as Midwest Food Bank gets the green light from the Salvation Army. Midwest Flood Food Bank supplies and ships food and hygiene items to areas affected by disasters, with the Salvation Army handling the food and supplies directly to people in need. "Until it hits, we don't know how much help is needed," Hoffman said. "We have to prepare for the worst and hope for the best. We sent 55 semi-loads for Hurricanes Harvey and Irma last year. Among the Wednesday volunteers who also helped with Harvey and Irma responses were Barb and Renee Bradley of Bloomington. The need is great," Renee Bradley said. "We'll be packing more boxes next week. What they, Midwest Food Bank, have here is not enough." Volunteer Amber Evans of Normal, an Illinois State University senior in social work and an intern with the Salvation Army of McLean County, said, "It's fascinating to see that even though this area will not be directly affected, when there is a need, people help out whenever they can, whatever they can do." Arbuckle, as a regular food bank volunteer, was coordinating Wednesday's volunteer effort. "It's a way to have a direct impact on people's lives," she said. "The spirit of the volunteers is awesome. You develop friendships with people who you wouldn't have met otherwise. This is not unusual," she said of Wednesday's effort. "When people see a need, they respond." Hoffman noted that the disaster response will be a long-term effort. She asked Central Illinoisans to check www.midwestfoodbank.org and the food bank's Facebook page for future opportunities to help. Meanwhile, American Red Cross, serving central and southern Illinois, has 37 staff and volunteers mobilized to provide assistance to survivors, said Amber McGrath, the regional communications director. Among volunteers are Mike McKnight of Normal, who will be dispatched to Virginia as Assistant Director of Logistics, and Dennis and Janet Greer of Forest, who will be sent to Virginia to assist feeding operations. Corn Belt Energy crews are scheduled to leave Bloomington on Thursday morning to assist with storm restoration efforts in the wake of Hurricane Florence, said Hillary Cherry, Director of Communications and Marketing. Rich Drager, Salvation Army Tri-County Director of Development based in Peoria, said, as the storm makes landfall and operations begin, we will be ready if called upon. Following are varieties of way to help the organizations preparing to respond in the wake of Hurricane Florence. For the Midwest Food Bank, to offset the cost of food and fuel to deliver the food, donations may be sent to Midwest Food Bank, 2031 Warehouse Road, Normal, Illinois, 61761, or by visiting www.midwestfoodbank.org and clicking Donate. To the American Red Cross. The Red Cross depends on financial donations to provide disaster relief. Donations may be made at www.redcross.org by calling 800-RED-CROSS or texting FLORENCE to 90999 to make a $10 donation. Red Cross Central and Southern Illinois Region is also recruiting new volunteers to assist with Florence relief efforts. A just-in-time fast-track training will be 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. September 15th at the Red Cross office, 311 West John H. Gwynn Jr. Avenue, Peoria, Illinois, 61605. The training is free, but registration is required at Kendra, KENDRA.HENSON, at redcross.org, or by calling 309-662-0500, extension 7425. And the last one is the Salvation Army. Monetary donations to support Salvation Army efforts may be made at www.helpsalvationarmy.org or 800-SALARMY or by sending checks to the Salvation Army Post Office Box 1959, Atlanta, Georgia, 30301. Designate 2018 hurricane season on the checks. Some hit the road. Seek safety as threat nears. In Bloomington, Hurricane Florence isn't expected to rain on central Illinois residents, but it's making life tough on several current and former residents who will have stories to tell forever. Take, for instance, the farewell that former Clinton residents Ashley Utterback and her husband Nolan had Tuesday morning from their home in Jacksonville, North Carolina. Ashley packed two daughters, Colby and Miley, and the family dog Dixie into the car and headed back to Illinois for safety. Nolan, meanwhile, boarded his helicopter, property of the United States Marines, with orders to fly to Tennessee to keep it out of harm's way. The family is based at New River Marine Air Station in Jacksonville. I'm not sure people often think about the spouses that are left behind to deal with kids, pets, houses, and things, while military personnel take care of the military bases, aircraft, buildings, and everything else to keep our country safe, said Ashley's mother, Gretchen Isaac of Clinton. Ashley arrived at her grandparents' house around midnight Tuesday. She has had to deal with a lot of traffic, Isaac said. Other folks with central Illinois ties also reported that traffic was a headache in leaving the East Coast for safer ground. I have never seen so many cars heading one way in my life, said Thomas Leslie, a former state farm employee and resident of Bloomington, who now lives near Hilton Head in South Carolina. Some people you meet are friendly and helpful and seem like they will do anything for the good of the evacuation. Others seem like they are running, like they had just robbed a bank and have no interest in helping out anyone except themselves. Mass evacuations are really a great study for social experiments. Jason Clark, a former Pantograph employee, is the advertising production manager for the Post and Courier newspaper in Charleston, South Carolina. He will be among the skeleton crew that will be riding the storm out. In a storm like this, we have learned that the television and radio stations often lose their signal, and the one place that people get their information is from the newspaper, he said. So we are releasing most of the staff at 3 p.m. Wednesday, and the rest of us will stick around and do whatever needs to be done. His wife is the manager of a couple of downtown hotels and also will be riding the storm out at work. Clark described his feelings as anxious and nervous as the storm approaches. I think the wind-up and anticipation before the storm hits is the worst, he said. Once the storm is here, you are busy, and there's so much to do. But we can't leave. I doubt we will be able to go outside. But things change, and the projection of the storm often changes in a few hours. But we are committed to putting a newspaper out and doing whatever we can for our residents. Some area residents are in the hurricane area for vacation, such as Pantograph employee Kat Cantrell, who is with her friends at Virginia Beach on Virginia's southeast coast. I have never been here before in my life, she said. I sure did pick a great week to come. Cantrell had plans to stay until Saturday, but will now leave Thursday. They expect to get about 24 inches of rain, she said. It is supposed to hit here Thursday, but already there are long lines at the gas stations and the stores are selling out of everything. Cantrell says she remains optimistic about a return trip. I think it's going to be interesting to see the before and after because of this, she said. So yeah, even though this trip didn't go as planned, it is still going to be quite an experience. In Normal, the School Street Food Pantry, a food pantry for Illinois State University, Illinois Wesleyan, and Heartland Community College students in need, will have an open house and ribbon-cutting ceremony from 5 to 6 p.m. Friday. The pantry is in the First United Methodist Church, 211 North School Street, Normal. The pantry, the first food pantry in Bloomington Normal, exclusively for college students, will be open 4 to 6 p.m. each Friday beginning September 21st. The food pantry is sponsored by the church in cooperation with ISU students and staff and Normal Township. In Gridley Street, Bloomington, northbound Gridley Street between Oakland Avenue and Mission Drive in Bloomington is closed to all traffic while crews do sewer work in the area. Jefferson Street, Bloomington. Jefferson Street between Main and East Streets in Bloomington will be closed Thursday due to the through traffic for street and traffic signal repair work. Unit 5 to I-sub issues. In Normal, McLean County, Unit 5 is forming a working group that will look into issues related to substitute teachers, including pay. In a report to the school board at its meeting Wednesday night, James Harden, Executive Director of Human Resources and Student Resources, said the working group would include substitute teachers, paraprofessionals, and administrators. Harden said the administration will also be looking into paying substitutes twice a month on the normal payroll cycle rather than the current practice of paying them once a month. The delay in pay was mentioned by a substitute teacher speaking during the public comment section of the board's last meeting. Three more substitute teachers spoke during the public comment section Wednesday night. Dwayne Mullaney, who is in his second year of substituting in Unit 5, said, "I think substitutes are professionals, and they should be treated that way." Mullaney said there were only three schools where he had a good experience and felt welcome. He also suggested there should be more feedback, letting substitutes know how they were doing. Don Lehman, who has been a substitute teacher in Unit 5 since 2006, said, "The amount of responsibilities put on substitute teachers is much more than 10 years ago, but the pay hasn't changed. Regular substitutes are paid $80 a day in Unit 5 and Unit 5 and Bloomington District 87. Retired teachers are paid $100 a day in Unit 5 if they retired from Unit 5. District 87 pays retired teachers $100 a day regardless of the district from which they retired. Marty Hickman, Unit 5 business manager, said the district paid nearly $1.5 million from the educational fund for substitutes. Increasing the substitute teacher pay by $10 a day would cost an estimated $112,000 more based on 2017-2018. Board members noted the difficulty finding substitute teachers is not unique to Unit 5. It's a collective problem we all want to solve, said Mike Trask, school vice president. Several packages of drugs were discovered Wednesday morning at the Clinton Power Station, but that was by design. It's really to give the canine handlers a new and fresh space for training, said Patrick Costa, the security operations supervisor at the plant, which was used for the first time for such a training exercise for police officers and their dog. 27 canine units from across Illinois were part of the day-long training. The drugs were hidden by trainers in various warehouses and discreet locations on the property. The first time the Clinton Power nuclear plant or any Exelon plant has been used for such canine training exercise. More than 25 agencies participated in the quarterly Operations Integration Canine Training Day, which was coordinated by Macon County Sheriff's Deputy Joe Mannix. Joe met with Ted Stoner, site supervisor at the plant, and discussed the possibility of using this training as a training facility, said Tracy Lillard, spokeswoman of the Illinois State Police. Pat Costa helped coordinate the effort. The whole idea behind it was that they could use new facilities that the dogs had not seen yet. Another advantage, she said, was that the dogs were used for training at Clinton Lake, which many training facilities don't often have. We also look at it as a way to give back to the community, Stoner said. The canine units and their handlers need a place to train. With the amount of space here, with warehouses, with a lot of different items, it's just perfect. For the exercise, Deputy Stuart Williams of the Piatt County Sheriff's Department brought Cato, a German Shepherd, who was perfect in a search for four items that were placed out of view of Cato and Williams. What these dogs can do is unbelievable, no matter how many times you see it, Costa said. Their sense of odor and how they hunt for items or people is simply amazing. In addition to hunting for personal belongings, the dogs also trained in finding drugs and controlling potential suspects in criminal cases. Sometimes the trainers try to outsmart the dogs and their handlers. Officer Jeremy Gwartney of Roodhouse brought Turbo into one of the massive warehouses to locate a drug that had supposedly been planted by trainers. After a 10-minute search, Turbo showed no signs of changed behavior and did not stop his search to sit in front of any item, the signal to the handler that he had discovered what he was looking for. They didn't plan anything, and sometimes they do that as well, just to ensure that he doesn't signal for anything not there. And he did his job perfectly, Gwartney said. Units from as far away as Alton made the trip, and area agencies included Decatur, Clinton, Normal, and Warrensburg City Police, Champaign, DeWitt, and Macon County Sheriff's Offices, Illinois Department of Natural Resources, Conservation Police, and four Illinois State Police Districts. There were five breeds of dogs, Belgium Malinois, Dutch and German Shepherds, and Labrador and Golden Retrievers. From the McLean County Board. David Siebert rang my doorbell last summer. He introduced himself as a candidate running for the McLean County Board District 2. I have never had a candidate for public office come to my door, David Siebert gets points for that. I talked with David, reviewed his brochure, and decided to vote for him on November 6th. He has good ideas. He attends meetings of town board throughout the district to learn more about the desires and wishes of those he will represent. After he is elected, he will continue this. This is refreshing. Additionally, David wants to change the time when the county board meets. He thinks to meet during the day makes it more difficult for people to attend meetings. I encourage people in District 2 to vote for David Siebert. Vote the person, not the party. In McLean County, Clerk, Kathy Michael continues to deny any responsibility for denying people the right to vote and blames the entire county board and refuses to directly answer her constituents for the media with nothing more than a statement. I want a county clerk who answers questions. We deserve better than that. This November 6th, make sure to vote for Ms. Nikita Richards. Caution needing and housing issues. I'd like to commend the Pantograph for its excellent series, Opening Doors, Safe, Affordable Housing, Hard to Find. As a caring, compassionate community, one of our highest priorities should be to provide our less fortunate neighbors the basic necessities, including food, basic medical care, and yes, a decent place to live. My concern is that some communities with the best intentions overbuild accommodations that not only address the needs of local residents, but also serve as a magnet to low-income individuals and families from outside their area. When these numbers exceed available employment opportunities, they create an additional demand on a community's resources, including police, fire, and ambulance service, hospital emergency rooms and school districts, township and city governments, charities and treatment programs. So while helping those in need locally, perhaps we could exercise some caution that we don't become an affordable housing destination that attracts others from around the state who come here only to discover that they can't support themselves or their families. Before building millions of dollars worth of additional low-income housing, maybe we should consider devoting more resources and funding to a system of inspections and code enforcements that helps ensure the safety, cleanliness, and structural standards of the housing we already have. A code with no fines or penalties is ridiculous. Sadly, despite warnings and red flags, we frequently issue tough talk and make decisive action only after considerable destruction, serious injury, or loss of life. Just the way things work, I guess. Written by Randy Gleason from Norman. Davis B. Dave Butcher, 80, of Pekin, formerly of Tremont, passed away at 7:01 a.m. Wednesday, September 12, 2018, at Unity Point Health Pekin Emergency Room. He was born February 22, 1938, in Kansas City, Missouri. Cremation has been accorded. There will be no service or visitation, but the family will receive friends from 1 to 4 Sunday at the Butcher Home, 2809 Black Oak Drive, Pekin. Carolyn McGinnis, 71, of Mackinac, passed away Monday, September 10, 2018, at the OSF Healthcare St. Joe Medical Center in Bloomington. Carolyn was born February 5, 1947, in Fairbury. Her service will be at 10:30 a.m. Saturday at Harvest Baptist Temple, Mackinac. Pastor Tim Savert will officiate. Visitation will be from 4 to 7 Friday, also at Harvest Baptist Temple. Marcia Lynn Mays, 48, of Normal, passed away at 11:32 p.m. Tuesday, September 11, 2018, at OSF Healthcare St. Joseph Medical Center in Bloomington. A celebration of life memorial service will be at 11 a.m. Saturday at Calvary Baptist Church, Normal. The family will receive friends from 4 to 7 Friday at Carmody Flynn Funeral Home in Bloomington. Mildred Millie Raspberry, 85, of Marquette Heights, passed away at 10:22 a.m. Monday, September 10th, 2018, at her home in the Hardest Village Nursing Home. She was born December 1st, 1932. Millie's visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. Friday at the Davison Fulton Woodland Chapel, Peoria. Graveside service will be at 10 a.m. Saturday at Park Hill Cemetery, Bloomington. A funeral today will be William Deterding, 3 p.m. at the First Presbyterian Church in Danvers. These are funerals pending. William Beatles, 88, from Bloomington, passed away at 3:15 Wednesday, September 12th, at his home. Rhonda Ann Floyd, 40, of Bloomington, formerly of Kankakee, passed away at 8:05 a.m. Sunday, September 9th, 2018, at her home. Donovan Gaines, 95, Verbanna, formerly of Roberts, passed away at 12:32 a.m. Tuesday, September 11th, 2018, at Meadowbrook, Urbana. And Matthew Warren, age 2, from McLean, passed away on Monday, September 10th, 2018, at his home. In Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, Hurricane Florence put a corridor of more than 10 million people in the crosshairs Wednesday as the monster storm closed in on the Carolinas, uncertainty over its projected path spreading worry across a widening swath of the southeast. Faced with new forecasts that showed a more southerly threat, Georgia's governor joined his counterparts in Virginia and North and South Carolina in declaring a state emergency, and some residents who had thought they were safely out of range boarded up their homes. The National Hurricane Center's best guess was that Florence would blow ashore as early as Friday afternoon around the North Carolina-South Carolina line, then push its rainy way westward with the potential for catastrophic inland flooding. Florence's winds in the afternoon were down to 120 miles from a high of 140 miles per hour, and the Category 4 storm fell to Category 3, with a further slow weakening unexpected as the storm nears the coast. But authorities warn it will still be an extremely dangerous hurricane. Do you want to get hit with a train, or do you want to get hit with a cement truck? Said Jeff Biardinus, administrator with the Federal Emergency Management Agency. Tropical storm force winds exceeded 195 miles from Florence's center, and hurricane force winds reached out about 70 miles. The National Weather Service said 5.25 million people live in an area under hurricane warnings or watches, and 4.9 million live in places covered by tropical storm warnings or watches. At the White House, President Donald Trump both touted the government's readiness and urged people to get out of the way of Florence. Don't play games with it. It's a big one, he said. As of Tuesday, more than 1.7 million people in the Carolinas and in Virginia were warned to clear out. Airlines had canceled nearly 1,000 flights and counting. Home Depot and Lowe's activated emergency response centers to get generators, trash bags, and bottled water to stores before and after the storm. The two hardware chains said that they sent in a total of about 1,100 trucks. Duke Energy, the nation's number two power company, said Florence could knock out electricity to three-quarters of its 4 million customers in the Carolinas, and outages could last for weeks. This is Carol signing off from the Pantograph for Thursday, September 2008, and until next time, I'll see you on the radio.